All right, tonight we're going to do the area of Yichud as requested by Sammy and Dave. And I really benefited greatly from Rabbi Shade gave a shiur in the area of the last couple of blot in Kedushin, which is the Mishnah and the Gemara deal with the area of Yichud and all the different permutations. And I think it was one. Sammy. All right, whatever. You can blame whoever it was later. So, I mean, going to the now Yichud is an interesting phenomenon because to a regular religious mind, like the prohibited to have relations with certain people, that makes sense. Oh, you can't have relations with somebody married woman. Okay, incest. All right. Yichud is something that is an area that gets sort of a mixed reaction. Let's see if we can identify some of the reactions. When people hear about most many people are just flat out unaware of it, but just saying within the religious community, members who have some sort of sense of Yichud, what are some of the prevalent opinions out there? You know, what are people's feelings about that?
Stupid.
Well, okay, this is well, okay. Be a little more. I agree with you. Be more specific. But they have more than just one sense. It's stupid. They have more of a speech on that. Why do they say it's stupid? I agree they say that. What?
There's nothing inherently wrong with it.
Nothing inherently wrong with the guy and girl being in the same room together.
Yeah.
Okay. And what else do they say?
I agree.
That's true, but let's say there's more...
It's not necessary.
Okay, unnecessary. Because, why is it unnecessary?
Because nothing's going to happen.
That's the line I'm waiting for. Nothing's going to happen. Come on.
But Rabbi, nothing's
going to
happen.
But Rabbi, thank you. Thanks for the personalization there. But Rabbi, nothing's going to happen. So, that's huge. Specifically, Kalacha works in certain categories. Two, as we're going to soon learn, two guys being alone with two girls is prohibitive. So, and then definitely you get the chorus, well, that's stupid, or B, that's nothing's going to happen, or because nothing's going to happen, therefore stupid. Okay? So you're going to have a combination of that. So, or, and other people have people, is they like, also, because Kalacha does not distinguish as far as women. Or men, because let's say women. Because people have the issue of people, of course, start to make their own categories: hot women, ugly women. You know, you can be alone with this girl, no problem, because she's ugly. Have you heard the same distinction?
Yeah.
Right. Or she's a grandma. She's old.
Yeah,
we aren't safe on that one. But I'm just sharing various quotes. Yeah, this is live, baby. It's not going to be on the internet. Forever. You remember, everything on the internet, it'll never get. It'll. You can take it down, but somehow I think it's always somehow that you can always assume it's always going to be there somehow. So, so it's something which is very. So it's a mitzvah. Whether it's a deraisa or a derban, we'll get into that.
It's actually a mitzvah.
It wouldn't be called a mitzvah. It'd be an isser, right? It's a commandment, right? Whether what category it's in, that's a dispute among the Rishonim. We'll get into that. But by way of introduction, we're going to start off with the end of. If you want to look along, it's the end of the Rambam and the laws of Yisurei Bia, the prohibited sexual relations, and he has a number of halachos which I think really open the area up. So therefore, when we go into some of the basic halachos, they'll be more meaningful instead of just having a very technical flavor to them. Okay, so let me just start off with something. Okay, so it says like this. Interesting halacha. It says, Ein dorshin besisrei arayos b'shlosha. One may not, a rabbi may not, be involved in explaining sisrei, the secrets, or the very delicate nuances of the laws around arayos. What is first of all, basic term. What is arayos, or an erva, singular, one erva, arayos, what is that referring to?
Sexual prohibitions that carry with it the punishment of kares.
Correct. It's a person, or not only a person, it could be also an animal, a being that if you had a sexual encounter with, it would result in, intentionally, it would result in car race. Okay? Clear? Sounds like this. So a Rebbe may not discuss with his students, with more than three students, these the sistre arayos, which is sort of the finer points of exactly how certain abstract and obscure issues of arayos are derived. Okay? Bibnei, why? She'echa tar v'she'elos arav, because one guy will be involved in asking the Rebbe very specific, detailed questions. Vashnayim, the other two, nosim v'nosim them, the other two will have a sidebar conversation and discuss amongst themselves. Ve'ein daitam p'nui l'shmoa, and their minds are not open to hear. Okay? Now, she'dait, and here's a curveball. She'daito shel adam krova etzel arayos, because the mind, or I think the better term here, the psyche of man is very close to, or has a very intimate relationship with, the world of forbidden sexual relationships. So what's the problem? Im nistapek lo davar sheshomea, if he's in doubt about something that he heard back in that shir at one point in time, Mora lahakel, he is going to make a legal decision leniently, and not properly leniently, but improperly leniently. Okay, lefikach ein dorshin el b'shlishnayim. Only in these, when the Rebbe is dealing with these particular finer points of the laws of arayos, it's only him to two students. Kadesha shiye echa shamea. So one guy will listen. V'fana daitiv yodea mashish m'men rav. So therefore, if one guy's talking, the other guy will listen, and he'll be able to focus with a clear mind, and he'll hear what the Rebbe said. So what you have here is a very strange thing. This is actually from the Mishnah, that there's a certain area of halacha that is prohibited to have an audience of a certain size. And why is that? Why is that? Why can't the Rebbe deal with the sistre arayos, the hidden elements, the more obscure elements of the laws of arayos, with more than with three students or more? Why is that? What does the Rambam tell us? What's the concept? David? You don't have to pick it. What's this concept? What's the rationale here? What's the problem? Why is this subject matter? But for example, if you're dealing with the most obscure the obscure or abstract ideas of the laws of Erevin, you can do that with 100 students, no limit. It's this area; it has to be taught 1 to 2 students only.
Nature of the law itself has to do with to people.
Yeah, but why? What's the difference? There's a key principle here that we have to start to see, which is it opens the door to this area that we're dealing with a different subject matter. Why can't? What's going to happen? With around, just tell me what the Rambam say. Let's say there's three students. What's going to happen? What's the problem? I didn't say what's going to happen.
He said that one person will be like asking the questions,
right,
and the other two will have a side conversation.
Right. And what's the problem with that? Okay, good. Everybody's learning. The beautiful scene. It's an idyllic scene. What's going to be the problem? And then what's going to happen?
Halacha.
No. Fine. They have to know these halachas too. Then the Rebbe will say something about a particular aspect of these halachos, and the person's mind was engaged with the sidebar conversation. He's not going to fully hear. Because why? Because the area of sexuality, a person's psyche, is very close to the realm of prohibited sexual encounters, relationships. So therefore, what is he going to hear?
What he wants to hear.
Exactly. But now, it's not going to be so distorting that he's going to be completely... So according to that, then you can only teach it one-on-one to make sure that there's complete clarity. But the point of the matter is that we're dealing with the people who are involved in Psach, people who are future post-gym. So we're talking about people of a very high caliber. But even these people are subject to slight distortion. So if they're going to hear a concept, they're going to hear it, they're going to try to remember back, and they're going to end up giving a distorted picture of it. Why are they going to have a distorted picture? because the psyche of man wants it to be all mutter. Okay? What does that tell you? What does it tell you about the, what we're dealing with here, this area of halacha? Well, you have to make one deduction here. I mean, this is something which is...
tremendous resistance to accept.
Tremendous, okay. First of all, tremendous resistance to accept it, which is going to get into the next halacha. That's a very good point. What other aspects are there? So what is resistance? So you have resistance. So, and that, and what is the, what's the, what's going to be some of the consequences of that resistance? Well, in this case,
you're apt not to see the idea correctly or clearly.
Well, you're not going to see the, yeah, you're not going to see the idea correctly because it's going to be all kinds of mental blocks are going to happen all over the place. You're not going to really hear it. You're not going to really fully understand it. You're not going to make all the necessary applications. You're somehow, you're, you know, that only applies in this case, but in the other case, somehow the dots are not going to be connected, and you're not going to have a full picture. It's a funny kind of thing. Okay, so you're dealing with, basically, you're talking about, you're dealing with a very powerful force here. Okay? Dealing with a very powerful force. Okay? And so these are talking about, we're not talking about regular Jews, we're talking about the post-Gim of the generations. You're talking about the best halachic specialists in the community. Okay? People who have tremendous energy to be, to do this job well. These are people who are not, who are not, to do, who are not concerned about halacha. These people are concerned about halacha. So one can make a little kal v'chomer to everybody else. Which gets us into the next halacha, halacha yudches. Eilachar dar b'chol ha-terakula shehu kashe l'rov ha'am l'frosh elam min ha-rayos ha-bios ha-suros. There is nothing in the Torah, in the entire Torah, which is difficult for the majority of the people to separate from, except from the prohibited section, the arayos, which is the kares ones, and forbidden sexual, other forbidden sexual activities. Okay? Nothing harder. Alright? And in fact, he now quotes a little Chazal. So the Rambam quotes a Chazal, it says like this. He said, Amru Chachamim, B'shah Shinstavu Yisrael al Arayos, at the moment when the Jews were first commanded with these laws. Okay? Going way back in time at Har Sinai. Bahu, they cried. The kiblu mitzvazu b'tarumos u'b'chia. They accept it with complaining and with crying. Now, Marla Pala says, Bahu bochel mishpachosav. They cried, each one in, with their families. As I'll say, al iskei mishpachos. On the matter of the families. What's going on? Because the Jews, like the their host country, the Egyptians, had practiced complete sexual freedom. Which mean, what does that mean? When they prohibited the arioses, what things which were previously prohibited, now, you know, which were previously, quote-unquote, they were involved in, now they found to be usher. Which is to us, and I'm going to tell you right now, we are, one could argue that we are subject to Christian repression, so these are going to seem to be like not a big deal. But let me just say it out loud. These are, this is, they came from the community where sexuality between, between children, not children, I mean between like, siblings, and with, you know, incest and adultery, homosexuality and bestiality, which Achrimos in Vayikra forbids, was something which they were to varying degrees were engaged in. So much so, when they were told these halachos, what was their reaction? They started to cry. What does that mean, Sam? What does that mean? Why were they crying?
They were sad.
They were sad. They were sad. All right. Why were they sad? Apparently, they weren't sad when they were told about on Pesach Yani Chametz. When they told them they had to wear tefillin, they were not sad about that. When they told them about they have to put up a mezuzah, they weren't sad about that. They're told they have to fast Yom Kippur, they didn't cry about that. Huge amounts of halachos. They can't cheat your neighbor in business, they weren't crying about that. This, they started to cry. And they bitterly, accepted it. So what does that teach us? Now, most people, when I've introduced this halacha in a different situation, I've had the following reaction from people. They say, you know, sexuality between brother and sister and, parents, it's gross. Are you going to have the, that's gross, okay? Now, you may think, and fine, if you think it's gross, that's fine. But you have to understand that they apparently didn't think it was so gross. Right? Because if it was something that was never occurring, you wouldn't have to have a mitzvah about it. In other words, there's no mitzvah that you shouldn't eat dirt. There's never been an occasion where Jews feel desire to, you know, I have a desire to dip my hand right into the garden and have a big pile of dirt and eat it. You know, so the totally only prohibits that which is an attraction to man. So already you see, this is a force to be reckoned with. So you're dealing with a world which has no repression. So we live in a post, you know, world where this was once permitted or not. Not it was never permitted because it was against the Shabbos of Noach, but it was widely done. So therefore, they didn't have any stigma against it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So they were very sad about that. So this goes back to Sandy's point. So what does that show you with the force that we're dealing with here, that halacha had to deal with? I mean, what does this show you about the whole deal? What the fact that you're seeing that the Chazal say that there's nothing more difficult in the entire Torah for most people to remove themselves, which is a rias, the regulations that provide kares, and the other ones which are osur but not kares. What is that? I mean, and then Klal Yisrael, when they were first told these mitzvahs, start to cry and they accept it bitterly. So how do you think that the Torah is going to have to address this problem, this issue? Yes.
I just have a question, actually.
Sure.
When they, that specifically when it says they were crying.
Bochel Mishpulsav, right.
So the implication is they were Bochel Mishpulsav meant that they were crying with reference to the prohibition on incest or all sexual prohibition?
Well, all the Ariuses, which will be...
All the Ariuses.
Which is, you know, not that many. It's going to be incest, it's going to be adultery, it's going to be homosexuality, it's going to be bestiality, are the basic ones. So you have to assume that they were... Very, very engaged, and we see that from the pasuk by Achrimos that it says that you have to remove yourself from the ways of Mice and Mitzrayim. So that's what's going on in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, they also used to have Mitzrayim was one step more sexually engaged than America was, because they had Ram talks about they had when he talks about the prohibition of lesbianism. That was one Maisimus Rhyme, that's one Isidorius of lesbianism, but it was also part of, used to have marriages between two guys, so it was like state-authorized marriages, and also a woman would have two husbands. So that was, you know, that was regular activities in the shrine. Okay? So it's a different different whole realm. We can't even understand that. You know, a lot of these things that we find, most people, if you ask them, how do you feel about that? Is that of interest of yours? And most people say, no, that's not wrong. I'm not really interested in that. Okay, so, well, there's a benefit for repression. Okay, so let's take a look at the next chazal. Amr Chachamim, Gezel, we did this maybe passing a number of months ago, Ve'arayos, Nafshel Sh'adam Mis'avel Lehen U'mach Madasan, theft, and the prohibited sexual relations, the soul of man, or better translated in this context, the psyche of man desires then umahmudasan and chimud is really lusts after them, really wants them. You'll never find a Jewish community in any time, in any era, shame behem prutz in baraya. So B.S. Thoros, you're never gonna find a community where you're not have a certain percentage of prutz of people who are freely, who are unable to control themselves in the area of sexual, so they're sexually, you know, I mean, a prutza is, you know, is a, what, what's is a slut, and what's the male equivalent? What's the male equivalent of that?
Man whore.
Man whore. Okay, there you have it.
Like,
what? There's another term for that? I don't have an exact term for that. Women
you
are
know what you mean.
Right, the male and the female thing of that. So that's an ever-present. That means even in the best Jewish community, you're always going to have that percentage. You know, it doesn't tell you percentages, but it's basically impossible to eradicate. There can never be 100% compliance. Okay, which is intriguing. And then he says, Odom Rucham also say, Rov v'gezel, the majority is with most Jews steal. Okay, we'll talk about that. Miyabarayas, a minority are engaged in arayas, vakol b'avak lashon hara. And everybody's involved in, at the very least, indirect lashon hara, which we can talk about what that is. So, I asked you a question. Why he suddenly brings in Gezel here. What's Gezel? Why is Gezel such, you know, we have... What's the deal with Gezel and arayas? How's, they're put together, suddenly how these show up as being too, you would say like food and food and sex are the two primary desires. We talked about that last time. But no, Gezel's put up there as well. What's the connection?
What's Gezel like? Thievery.
Stealing. Now, but you understand, it's not talking about armed robbery, because that's not, but there's a whole host of things which are stealing, which most people are not even sensitive to. You know, it could be borrowing a pen, could be taking off deductions, off the old, you're an accountant guy, taking off deductions which you're not really qualified, which you're not really justified for, but are most likely are low probability you'll get called on. You know, these are the... Sam? Yeah, Sam, lay it on us.
They're similar in the sense that everyone's going to be a guilty event.
Okay.
It's extremely difficult for a person completely innocent from getting some form or another of,
okay.
For example, like not returning a pen,
right.
Or, taking some office supplies or something like right. That. It would be like thievery. It's like everybody does it like, at some point or another, and they're not even like aware of it.
Right.
So it would be like the same thing in this area as well. You know, they have like certain thoughts or desires or, you know what I'm saying? Like everyone's guilty and it's different than most other things, you know, here. So easy for a person.
He's putting them, so you can understand that the quest for Arias is a desire of man, and it's a big desire of man. Fine. Especially in America, because America is such a sexualized country. But why would you say that he says that? Why is stealing as big a desire? You're talking about from the framework is ever present. But how do you see that being as far as the interest of man? You know what I'm saying? Do you see that? And also, before he says, there's nothing harder for... And one second, is that a contradiction to what he said before? There's nothing harder for the majority of the community to pull away from is than these areas of the sexual. That's statement number one. And then it says here that Gezel and Arias is most people's psyche is interested in it and desires it. Is that a contradiction? The state is not inherently contradictory, but is that
sounds a little bit different,
right? So what's he trying to point out here? And the funny thing is that he says that even though that it's a, but then it seems to be a somewhat another contradiction. Is like, so if everybody's totally obsessed with this area, so then why? And he says that you're never going to find a community where you're not going to have prutzim, people who are completely unrestrained in the area. But at the end, he says. Most Jews steal, which means that Gezel comes to number one, and a minority are engaged in Arias. If it's number one, why did it come down? It's not number one. There seems to be a number of variables here that it may be a big interest, but as far as the outcome, it's not the interest. It's not number one. You see, it seems to be not clear chunk. How do you tease those things out? Dad, Gary.
With reference to the last point, at least, you could say that the people be involved in the brain freeze.
Okay, so it's all right.
Right. In other words, he's saying that the reason that Rove Begezel and Mia Arias, but on the other hand, saying there's a tremendous attachment to the Arias is because the Arias is a tremendous attachment to, but there's probably like a lot of guilt associated with being involved in it.
How about Gezel? People don't feel guilt by Gezel?
Gezel, I mean, I don't know, like you said before, it's like different variations of Gezel. Not involved in armed robbery.
Right.
They're involved in little, a guy doesn't feel guilty when he, a guy doesn't feel guilty when he steals on the income tax return because he justifies it.
Right.
But in terms of...
Right, they, well, there's so much waste, and I don't agree with the way the government is spending their money, and right. Blah, blah, and, you know, BB, and...
Well, couldn't you rationalize everything?
Yeah, we give everybody, yes.
So therefore, Rove Begezel. So everybody will be involved in that, because there's no superego, there's no guilt. The guy doesn't really have any guilt in doing anything. But me with the Arayos, the minority involved in the Arayos, because even though there's an overpowering urge for them, nevertheless, there's a lot of... A guilt associated with it.
Okay, so you're predicating. Okay, so but there's another factor.
Okay,
I think what you're saying is true. There's another factor. Let's just think of just ease of doing.
Right.
You want to have an affair? That's an operation. Okay. Because first of all, you have to get the girl to be interested in you. I'm going to take you know, unfortunately, Laura, so I have to. I'll just do it from the guy to the girl involved. I'll see if I can make it both. You know, work it both ways here. So. If the guy's married, so then he's got to start being like Mr. 007 guy. He's got to figure out how to do this whole operation. And he's got to develop his relationship with his woman. And he's got to make sure the other party does not know about it. And he's got to be sort of, you know, it's a whole, and it's not something, you know, even if he's interested in, he's got to go find a hotel. And he's got, you know, it's something which is very hard to do. It's, in order, it's not something like there's a piece of chaser and you just take it, you can go into the 7-Eleven and buy the tray. Boom. Here is a conversation, there's drinks, there's going to a movie, it's this and that, it's a whole going out to dinner, a hotel, and it's a whole operation. So that is something that during that many steps of the process that his reality principle will be able to put the brakes on that whole process.
Well, it's that much harder, like.
Then stealing stuff from the, then taking stuff
gotta
from
the car,
he's
got to drive to 7-Eleven, he's got to get out of the car, walk to the 7-Eleven, he's got to
no, but,
pick out the fork. And
I don't mean by as far as just simple steps. Okay, so let me define a little sharper, because I see that I wasn't being clear. Because basically, in the vast majority of cases, sexuality emerges from a relationship. Well, stealing office supplies does not require a relationship. You just go into the office supply closet, and you say, well, I need some papers, blah, 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 and you take it. Boom. While sexuality is going to emerge through the vehicle of a relationship, which requires many steps to make that happen.
Right. This is psychologically, personally, it's much more difficult.
Right. Even though the interest may be greater. Even though that's why it's Rove Begezel, because... Since people are not thinking conceptually about what is, you know, my rishus versus my friend, my fellow's rishus, and you know, and what are the rights of each person, they're not thinking in those framework and they're thinking Gezel basically in the well. Let's put it, why? What's the number one reason? Person would not, for example, steal, you know, go in there and steal $1 million. Well, not take $1 million out of the safe because that's really bad, but to take a buck. Or to take 5 pence, they would. What's the difference? From the realm of qualitatively, you have something which is not yours in your possession. There's no difference between stealing between $1 and $1 million. So what's their framework? Why do they view this as a distinct difference? Why do a person have the ability to take that? Why are they able to be able to...
Easy
to
rationalize it.
But what's the key rational... What's their definition of gazelle that allows them to take small items, for example?
Entitled to it. It's significant.
Okay, so what's your definition? Yeah, so Gezel is what?
It doesn't matter who has it, it's dumb. It doesn't matter.
Okay, so no, but what is your definition of Gezel? Gezel is when you do what? What's your definition? They have to have a definition of Geneva or Gezel, which views that this activity is not a problem. For example, parking the car in the metered area and not paying the meter is Geneva. Because really, when you pay the meter... You're renting the space from the municipality. and they're charging you 25 cents an hour, let's say. But I'm just going to go in for a second. I'm just going in there. I'm just running in the store for 1 second. Okay? So what's the person's thought here? Why is that, why, you know?
They think they can just get away with it.
Well, they can get away with it.
You got a good thought.
So, but what is their? But what's their thought? What is Geneva in their mind? But they would never go into. They would never go into 7-Eleven and take a handful of Snickers bars and stick them in their purse. They wouldn't do that. But they would have no problem parking at the meter and not paying the meter.
Well, one person's taking something in the meter, they just feel like...
Yeah, well, but what's the definition?
Trying to like it.
But what's their definition? You understand? Even in the emotional world, they have some working definition of Geneva, which this is not, which taking the Snickers bars is Geneva, but taking the parking spot is not Geneva. How do they work that out? Every rationalization...
Because they feel like they're entitled to that spot, but they don't feel like they're entitled to the Snickers bars from the store.
So just pure entitlement, or is it they say like I'm stealing? Okay, that's done. But there's also a definition of what Geneva is that allows them to do this. They're basically saying this is not even stealing at all. They go a step further. This is not stealing. But you're right. The entitlement makes everything go smoother. The key thing is that in most people's mind, Geneva is about damaging your friend. I take their stuff. They're damaged. They don't have their stuff. But what's a pin? It's like nothing. Or to a spot. What's the difference? The town, Lawrence, the village of Lawrence, not going to get a quarter? Big deal. What's the difference? You know what I mean? Because while the Jewish concept of Geneva has nothing to do with impact, in other words, it makes a difference if the person's rich, the person's poor. It has to do with the realm of have you violated their bylaws? Have you violated their ownership? And they have, this is their property. They can charge rent. You're using it. You're not paying rent. You're a ganav. There's no difference between till a quarter or $250 million. There's no difference.
But still, like, you know, people say, like, oh, like, you can take from them because they're rich. But doesn't that tell you something about a person's psyche? And then, like, if the person was poor, they'd say, like, oh, like, you couldn't take anything from them.
Well, you have also you also have a case, for example, in the courtrooms of America. Let's say you're a lawyer, and your client was an individual guy who got injured by a product from a multinational corporation, and you have a jury there. What is your job? As far as the old settlement, what are you trying to do? Why cash in? But what's on your side?
Well, the idea that
but they have all this money. They're worth billions. And this poor guy, right. His life was ruined, and he should get, you know, beyond, you know, for being, you know, for burning himself with a cup of coffee, he should get $5 million.
Right.
All right? And that's why you have all these, you know, unbelievable, these great settlements. It's always the way that the lawyer is able to paint the picture to make the guy feel bad that this poor guy is being nailed by the wealthy corporation and they should pay.
Poor Schmerl.
Right, poor Schmerl. So, but that's not justice. That's, you know, it shouldn't make a difference whether it's one company to another company, rich guy to rich guy, poor guy to poor guy, that's it. Or you don't mix up, to make it very simple, we do not mix up mishpat and tzedakah. If a poor guy owes $5, even if it's last $5, we take it from him. The basin takes it from him. Oh, now he's chayav tzedakah? You can give him money. Give him tzedakah. It's two different realms. You can't use mishpat, justice, as a vehicle to, you know, you can't do Robin Hood. You can't steal from the rich because and to make to deal with various social iniquities. There's two separate realms. So that's the. That's the deal. So going back here, so Rove Begezel is because people's definition of Gezel, A, is what Sammy's saying, there's a tremendous entitlement. B is that they feel that they're entitled to all the resources in the world. B is that the definition of Gezel boils down to damaging somebody, so therefore it's almost a substantial thing, they feel they can take it. But Arias is even though there's a tremendous powerful urge there as well, There's what you hear Gary say. There's a guilt factor. It's a complicated area. And B, the second element is, since sexuality, as we're going to see very clearly, is mediated through a relationship, that's hard to A, initiate and sustain, and to make that happen. So therefore, that's going to reduce the situation. All right. Oh, what's a vaklashnara? Just we may have mentioned this. Anybody know what a vaklashnara is? Versus regular lashonara? A vak lashonara. A vak means a dust up. This would be an indirect lashonara. Anybody know what that is? Lashonara is communicating negative information about a fellow Jew. Okay? So I say, Steve is a big jerk, and he cheats, and he's a bum, and he's ugly, and he's fat. Okay? So that's a nice, that's a pretty comprehensive lashonara statement there. Okay? Now, a vak lashonara, so that's, as you all know, that's Osir. So, that's not a chiddush. Now,
even if it's true, right?
Yeah, lashonara has to be true. Making up, we can, you know, this is always a good topic. Making up stuff, you know, otherwise known as pure character assassination, is called mosi shemra. Okay, that's making up lies about somebody. That's okay. Now, a vak lashonara, when you say like this, you know, somebody's asking you to go out with somebody. You know, here's a classic case. What do you think about Sally? Oh, she's cute. You don't say openly a negative statement, but through inference, one can deduce you're communicating negative. You know, it's something, a tone in your voice, it's a facial expression, it's a rolling of the eyes. That's a vak lashonara. You're communicating the negative information indirectly. All right, so a kol, which means tzaddik included. It's something which is so hard. What is it really? The aggressive instinct in man is so powerful that to be able to edit that out is simply impossible. I mean, every Jew trips up on that. Okay, that's what it says. Hakol. I mean, everybody. It means that, you know, it's only a rare individual who's perfected the degree that they are able to control themselves, not only in their verbal statements, but even in their body language. They don't even communicate negative information about a fellow Jew. They're on that level. Okay? Now, okay. So basically, so let me, at this point in time, why do you think the Torah set up an institution of Yichud? Now it should be pretty self-evident. Dave? Going back to the people who says, nothing's going to happen. This is stupid. So what now can you say about that? What's as far as the dead?
The unconscious, the drives are so powerful that you have to set up like a fence or something to prevent this from.
All right. The key thing to understand halacha is to understand that sexuality is not an event but it's a process. Okay. Okay. This is. And if you understand the basic concept, therefore there's basically you can break it down to four steps. Okay. Step one, of course, this should be not a chiddush to anybody, but I'm going to categorize it, which I think will be a chiddush. Category number one is what you call communicating interest. That's called flirting. Okay? So the law has some guidelines to that. We'll touch upon that at a later point. Two is yichud, is the condition where sexuality can occur. Okay, you're now in a private area where sexuality could occur. Doesn't have to. Okay, three is what you call foreplay, chibuk v'nishuk, or in the vernacular, making out. Okay, and then five, and then the fourth step, of course, is actually sexual intercourse.
What's five?
No, it's four. So we have communicating sexual interest. That's one that's called flirting. Two is yichud, is the creating the environment for sex to occur. Three is psychologically making the parties capable of having sex, which is basically making out, which is chibuk v'nishuk, what they call foreplay. And then number four is actual sexual intercourse itself. Okay, there's no step five that I'm aware of. All right, I'll just point out that there's now. Why is there a need to joke, Danny? Why is there a need to joke, David? Why is there a need for Sam to make a joke about it?
Not a savvy.
I think you might have an easier chance in understanding that. But he will. It's an area that has to come. Well, it's an area which is which. You know, what's joking? What's the idea of joking there, Sammy?
A lot of resistance.
First of all, there's a lot of resistance, and joking is it can be a tool of denial. Don't want to accept the reality, we'll make a joke about it. Nah, nothing happened. Is that a fairly reductive yet clear four steps?
Yes.
Clear. All right. You know, that's it. You don't have to be a major chacham. As you can imagine, so halacha basically deals with each stage differently. So let's start with the last stage. So the arise itself, of course, is sexual intercourse. That, of course, is forbidden. That's get courage for that. Moving right along, one step prior, kiva v'nishuk, you know, the foreplay with an arise is also asur min araisa. Even if it, now here's a question. This is the class thing when people came to me and says, Rabbi, I know how to put on the brakes. Okay? So what's the response to them? Dave? I'm giving you momish lines that I've dealt with in my years of doing this.
Now you don't know how you're gonna act in the situation.
Okay. Two answers. First of all, what you're saying is correct. Because the person that's sitting calmly on the couch now having an intellectual conversation about it is not the same person who's going to be when they're in that room or in that car. Correct. So they're two different people. And in Tim Salome where they are in Navi, and they say that, no, it's not going to happen, it makes a difference. Because that is a level of sexual involvement that the Torah forbade. Even if you know that the person is going to drop dead, and it can't possibly happen. All right? Doesn't make a difference. Because they ushered that level of his ask, that engagement in the activity, per se. You know what I'm saying? It has no difference whether it's going to move up the next notch. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just, they made that stage a discrete phenomenon in its own right, and they made it ushered. Even if it's like impossible, let's just create, you know, for example, classic question, I'll throw it out to you. Will you say yichud a girl with a gay guy? Yichud?
Yeah.
You say yeah? What do you say?
Definitely.
Say yeah? But he's not interested. He's not interested.
Doesn't matter.
He's queerer than a $3 bill. I don't know what the terminology is. As queer can be, okay? Just not interested. Yichud?
Yeah.
You say everybody's voting a solid yichud. Why?
That's what the Torah prohibited, so they fall into the category.
Or he's a guy, that's it.
So.
Right. Doesn't, right. The question is, but there's there, you have the flip side. Is the yichud for him to be along with a guy? That, or is that guy also to be alone with a guy? No. Is it yichud for him? We'll see. It's not so simple. Not so simple. Okay? So the bottom line is that the first thing is that we, just from the first halacha we did, we clarified that A, is that basically from the, let's just build a case here. Case, fact one. We see from the fact that by, that we have a collection of Talmidei Chachamim dealing with the most obscure and most remote cases of laws of Arias, that the unconscious forces are so powerful that it can even distort their thinking. A. B. We pointed out that the Chazal pointed out that this is the hardest area for people, for the majority of the community, to pull away from. So much so that when the Jews were introduced that these things were forbidden, you can no longer have incest, they start to cry. Okay? Three is that we point out that it's something which always exists. There's always people who are unable to control their sexuality in every community, even when the Jewish community are on a high level. Let's say, like in the time of Hizkiyahu or David HaMelech or someone else, it's still a problem. It's an ever-present problem. It can never be eradicated because the sexual force of man is so powerful. It's simply that it's not there. Not everybody's going to be able to deal with that. So having said that, therefore you see already why the Torah had to back up the truck, if you will, and deal with the many stages of sexuality, and deal with them individually, because otherwise a person's not going to be able to have a chance. That's the answer. Therefore, why is it stupid? No. The person says stupid means that they are completely unaware of A, their own, they have no idea of the world of their own sexual, they have no awareness of their sexual self. They're completely oblivious, and of themselves, and of course the world of sexuality, and how powerful that really is. We had the best, the biggest riot. Of course, you see that even affected Shlomo Melech, who was the greatest chacham. So you can, if it's the biggest problem for Shlomo Melech, call the chum or anybody else.
Did we also do another topic on this as well? Do you remember that?
We touched upon it just in passing. We did a little sidebar. Okay. Now the Ram talks about the remedies for this problem. Okay. Lefikach roi lo l'adam l'kof yisro b'davar zeh. Therefore, it's appropriate for a person to control his desires in this area. U'lahargil asmo b'kedusha yisera, and to cause himself with extra holiness or separateness would be a better translation of the situation. And of clean thoughts, which means basically to try to make his thoughts not as to remove the sexuality from the thoughts as much as possible. Now here's the key word, in order to be saved from them. Use the word hatsala. Why is that a term appropriate here? What is he's making the word, when he throws the word hatsala in there, that already it should be surprising. Why is he putting the word hatsala, to be saved? How does that, what's that got to do with anything? Why is that relevant to our conversation? Okay. Why is hatsala an appropriate term here? You know what I'm saying? For example, a guy is running from bandits. He needs to be saved. A person is being chased by a pit bull. He needs to be saved. When there's a hatsala is an environment when there's a vicious enemy out there which requires a tremendous intervention. Why is that term, that verb, used here? It's a very odd term. I think we have enough background to be able to understand that.
The question is, why saved from what?
What is he saved? Good. Saved from what? What is the Chazal saying? Saved from what?
In situations.
Being saved from his own sexuality. What's the assumption here? Bingo. Exactly. There's a point where a person cannot exercise their Bechira. That all you can do, there's certain things that a person always has Bechira. Here, the way that the word Hatsala, it means that basically all you can do is avoid certain circumstances. And then you'll be quote unquote safe. But you put yourself in a certain extent, you're going to put yourself in such an emotionally vulnerable sexually vulnerable situation that is it's unrealistic that a person will be able to extract themselves from that. So that's why to avoid. So therefore he says v'zahir mina yichud, and avoid yichud. Shehu ha-gorim ha-gorol. It's the great cause. Why is he calling Yichud the great cause? Why is Yichud the great cause?
Because?
He calls it the gorim ha-gorol, the great cause. Why is Yichud, now he labels Yichud as being the great cause. What is it the great cause of?
I was thinking that the fact that the person stays away from sin in this area is probably attributable to the fact that in large measure it's something people find out about or something, but to the extent that you have now, you're in the situation of seclusion,
right.
Then that situation where of extraneous factors that are helping him are now removed.
Exactly.
So inevitably now he'll...
Exactly. In other words, what basically holds the person, so that from therefore you can deduce, what holds the person back from a lot of being engaged in sexual encounters? Well, that just basically, but what is seclusion? Or is seclusion increases the chance non-seclusion. So what really, that already gives you a clue what's the main factor, what's a major factor. Just one deduction away.
Right.
If seclusion blocks out the forces that will stop the guy or the girl, so non-seclusion helps the situation to avoid the problem. What is that variable? What basically holding the place people back?
Opinion of other people.
Yes. Yeah. So the reality of society, which is for the healthy psyche, a person does not want to be assessed as being a person who is sexually unrestrained, or what we call female being a slut and a guy slut. I don't know. I don't like man whore. It doesn't really get to the whole. Doesn't have the same ring to it. You know what I'm saying?
Male prostitute.
That's already a profession already.
I guess you just call the guy a playboy.
Right, he gets a better name.
Because
our society really maintains that. See, funny. Further, that's a double standard. For the guy, it's viewed as an asset. It's viewed as an excellence. But for a girl, it's always a liability. You know what I mean? Nobody says, "Oh, that's very nice." Oh, so well, tell me about your cousin. Well, she's a slut. Oh, very nice. And she's getting a master's what? It's like, oh, very beautiful. No. But a guy always a playboy, it's not looked upon, it's looked down upon, but not, it's looked down a little bit, far less, you know, because of our, in our double standard society, which we discussed on other occasions. Now, this is gonna be a line that I think I told you in passing, but it will blow your mind. Maybe you forgot it. Gedolei Chachamim, the great, when you're talking about the Talmud, the great, author of the Mishnah, Hayu Omer LaTalmideihem, would say openly to their students, Tizhiru bi mipnei biti, please warn me concerning my daughter. Tizhiru bi mipnei kalasi, warn me about my daughter-in-law. Kedei lamei LaTalmideihem, in order to teach their students, Shelo yizbaishu midavar zeh, they should not be embarrassed about the thing, v'yisrachik min ha'yichud, and distance themselves from the yichud. I think I may have mentioned this. I don't know if you might remember this. Do you remember this?
I think so.
Okay, so what really is the principle here? But let's put it into context here. What do these Rosh Yeshivas do? The guy says, warn me about, make sure I'm not alone with my daughter. So it seems, is there an issue with a father being alone with the daughter?
There's no issue, but there could be some unconscious force at play here, you know.
The Torah didn't forbid it.
Right. Well, it's
was he doing it really as a practical measure for himself? What was he trying to do? It was an educational move on his part. Because this gets to another aspect which we didn't explore. Part of the reasons of the unawareness is there are other factors here, which that we see that the...
what did he do? Warn me what?
Warn me from my daughter.
Warn me when I'm with her?
Yeah, to avoid to be alone with her. And also the daughter-in-law, which would, right.
Warn.
Or to avoid that situation, to avoid that environment. But asking his students to help in that situation. What's the concept there? I think I'll repeat the story that we did. It was a couple of months ago. I don't know if you remember the story. I'll share you the story at the end. But he's doing a very interesting, the Rosh Hashiva there in the Mishnah, I mean the Gemara, was doing a very interesting educational move there.
He was showing the... Plus, like the power of the whole area, just a lot of times beyond people's comprehension.
So what was the valuable lesson there that he was teaching them?
Never underestimate.
What would be the student's havamina?
That it, obviously, if you're with a daughter, you want to be warned. If you're with father's with a daughter, then
absolutely correct. But what would they be thinking? What would a student be when he's looking up to his Rebbe?
Maybe there's some type of attraction.
Right. He would. No. What's the chiddush here? When he said it was very, it was a very stunning statement in the base medrash. What would be the students before this announcement was made? What would the students' thoughts be?
Or anything to his daughter.
Right. First of all, natural to a Talmud Rebbe relationship is to begin to exalt and create a certain aura around this person. The person is removed from all the, you know, these material and physical desires. He's not subject to this. So he just did the opposite. He went the other extreme. So he told them, "Oh, you got to watch me about my daughter." So what he taught them is that nobody is immune to these problems. There's nobody. In other words, there's nobody beyond. As long as you're an Adam, you are subject to these forces. And now he gets to that thing. The Shiloh. Then he gets another thing. They shouldn't Shiloh Yevayshu Midavda. They should not be embarrassed. What's the embarrassment factor? How does that fit into the whole thing? How does the embarrassment factor? How does that cloud everything up?
We shouldn't be embarrassed.
But they should not be embarrassed. You know, he's doing. He's making that declaration, which is sort of, you know, something that you they were shocked. So they should not be embarrassed. What is he trying to do with them? He's doing a very important therapeutic move there.
They're embarrassed when they uncover their own unconscious thoughts.
So what should be there? What will be their feelings? What would be happen when they would, let's say they would have those feelings? What would they do?
Would be embarrassed.
They'd be embarrassed and they would repress it. Or they wouldn't deal with it. Or they would just basically
avoid the repression of it.
Right. So they would just, since it's an area where there is guilt and there's embarrassment, so therefore a person would not be aware of it. And if he's not aware of it, why is that a problem? Well, let him not be aware of it. Well, let him not be aware of it. This guy has an ancestral attraction to one of his immediate family members. Maybe he should feel embarrassed about it. Why is that bad? Why did the Rosh Yeshiva make such a dramatic statement? Why didn't he not, he may want to make them, they should not feel embarrassed about it? Okay, yeah.
Some form. In that form, or it'll be like displacement.
Okay.
Come out in a different form.
Okay, correct.
Back pain. Maybe they don't have a back pain. Each day you're trying to pin it on me on time. You're really trying to regress.
All right, so the bottom line is, no, what you're bringing up is good, because basically, if a person is, see, that's the whole area. Part of the lack of knowledge is, since there's guilt about these areas, so therefore a person has a whole wall of he's lacking awareness in the area. So therefore, if you're completely, going back to our original term we used from the very beginning, which is, if you're purely a reactive person, you're not reflective at all, You are open season. You have nowhere to what can happen. You can walk into a situation that you're just simply not aware of. In other words, you're not, there's no captain of the ship here. You could be totally overwhelmed, and you're gonna have no knowledge of this. So what he wanted to do is what he brought out to everybody, making himself, in other words, what he did was like this, by him making himself as the therapist of these Talmidim, I have this problem, therefore they don't feel guilt about him having a problem. So he's saying that he has an issue with his immediate, you know, daughter, or with his daughter-in-law, whatever it is. So, which of course was shocking to them, but it showed that this is a reality, and they should not. The halacha is not that you can't feel any feelings towards it. The Torah did not forbid feelings. The Torah said you cannot engage in the relationship. So therefore he made it conscious to them, and therefore they could deal with it. Of course, I think, do you remember what happened when he made this? The Ram does not bring the part of the next part of the story. What happened in the next part of the story, which the Ram does not quote? One of the Talmidim, after the Rosh Yeshiva made this announcement, started to laugh at him, make a joke. And the Gemara ends the next line. Within that year, that guy had a problem in the area of Arias. Unbelievable. Which means that his laughing was really a cover-up, because he had the powerful drive, and therefore he had to say, "Hey, this guy is a lowlife," you know, whatever, pinning it on his teacher. And meanwhile, that laughing was really a cover-up for all the stuff going on inside of him. So he was really the laughing was really the projection of. Because really, the Rebbe had, you know, by saying it, had touched upon something that was had rung true in his world. I mean, you just see that. I just want to point out. You just see how differently how the Torah deals with sexuality in a very open way. Not See, in America, they talk about sexuality in ways to satisfy, on a basic level, the sexual satisfaction by talking about sex. Here, he's talking about sexuality insofar as to categorize it, understand it, and to work within it, not to deny it, not to demonize it, but to understand it and then be able to work with it. It's completely, you don't have, this portion does not exist in our world. Either you have complete repression that, you know, which is not as prevalent as it was in the 50s, but, you know, sex is evil, or let's talk about sexuality, you know, let's talk about sexuality as much as we can as being some sort of enjoyment, vicarious enjoyment, or a low-grade sexual enjoyment of talking about sexuality itself. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying that you have the two extremes in our society. This voice of about sexuality is not heard at all. I'm just bringing that point up. Now, the last little halacha here. This is interesting. Persian should accustom himself to distance himself from joking around. Doesn't mean he should not make a joke. Distance himself from joking around. Which means he should not be defined as the joker. Okay, everybody's like the class clown, it's a joker. Okay? We have to connect that. The jokes and sexuality have a very interesting connection. We'll get to that. I.e. the dirty joke, of course, being shifros, or from drunkenness. Third category. Umidivri agavim, or like romance novels, romantic stories, plays, movies, something like that. She'elu gormim gidolim, they are great causes. Behem ma'alot shel arayos, and they are degrees of engagement in sexuality. Okay, that is, you understand that, it's a tremendous psychological insight right there. Lo yesha v'lo isha, person should endeavor to be married. Shemeneg zeh garm l'tahara yiseira, because that will cause him to be involved in extra purity, extra tahara. Now here's a key one. Gedola mikol zo, but greater than that, greater than being married, Amru, they said, yifane asmo, he should turn himself, umachshavto, and his thoughts, his inner world, the divrei Torah, learning. Yarchiv daito v'chachma, and expand his mind with wisdom. E machshavos arayas, mizga beres, el abelei panim min hachachma. Because the thought, sexual thoughts, fantasies, does not take hold, does not become a dominant fixture in the person's psyche, only with a mind which is free from chachma. There's a lot of stuff here. Okay, we'll lay the last pasuk for him. So let's take it piece by piece. There's a veritable a tremendous insight in psychology. He gets three things. I have a simple question. What does chok have to do with sexuality? Guy makes jokes. He's going to be sleeping around? I mean, please make that connection to me. Two, drunkenness. I think that's a little bit easier. Third, being involved in romance novels, romance stories, romance movies, having explicit sexual conversations. So please tell me how each one of those let's deal with the hardest one, the most remote one. How is joking around? What does that got to do with anything? What does joking around got to do with sexuality? Jokes, sex. What's the connection?
Any kind of joke around.
He doesn't say he can't make a joke. He doesn't say aster l'daber aschok. No. He shouldn't. The person should try to distance from joking, which means it should not be his main feature of his personality. What does joking have to do with sexuality? And if you want a hint, I'll give you a hint, but let's see if you can do it without a hint. What does joking do? You have to understand what joking does.
Like I'm wondering if, like you're saying, like it alleviates or relieves of a certain tension. Maybe talking about like a sexual frustration here of some type.
True. That's a part of it. Let's make it very clear. Person's at a party, and he meets a girl or a guy. Okay, we're going to make it equal. All right. So if there's joking going on, how does that make the situation go better? versus this conversation is very rigid. So what course are you taking at Declan College? Sounds good. It's really interesting. What's your schedule? Really? Can you bring to the kosher cafeteria? All right, no jokes. Just very communicating negative. David, you having a flashback there? Hey, you're on my dates. What's going on?
Quite a few.
All right, it's the community. It's passing back and forth, straight, no jokes. It's yum. It's Neil time at on Yom Kippur in the shul. All right, what's the deal? Although, by the way, interesting. I'll contrast that. Yet the Gemara says the person, the Rebbe, should start his shiur with a joke. So you have to explain that. All right, we'll fill it all in. So jokes on one hand are being heralded as being the best thing. On one hand, if it's too much, it's funny. Some amount, fantastic.
Well, yeah.
Too much, bad.
Well, it's joking is step one.
Go ahead.
No.
What does it do? Let's be more specific. What's joking? How does joking work? How does joking help? Is it just bringing rapport? The other thing can also bring rapport. So let's say, you went to Camelby. I went to Camelby. Oh, well, you were there. Oh, you were there. 98. Oh, I was there. 98. That's also build rapport.
Okay, so it's kind of like.
It's not. Mood it's
or ambiance.
Okay, good. You're getting warmer. Go ahead. And what is that?
Psychological ambiance.
Okay, so what is that? No, you're right. You're on the road there. What state does it create?
Not so serious.
Makes it right. Relaxed. It's lighter. But what's
It's a removal from a real guy from expression from a reality. A guy like in a soothing person like a cookie. So in the pill and like a drink.
Alright. So what you're trying to say there, Dave, is like this. You're saying that if I understand you correctly, is that that the joke, the effective joke, shifts the person from the serious world of everyday responsibility. You know, you're in that, we'll call that work orientation, and then gets them into a playful, not serious, non-reality, not thoughtful, just sort of living in the moment.
Kind of like sparse imagination.
All right, well, moment, but it gets the person in that world of, it basically, to put it very simply, it shifts the person into a world, it helps the person shift into a world of an emotional world, a certain kind of emotional world of sort of like of playfulness and there's nothing serious, you know what I'm saying? It creates it, put it in psychological terms or psychoanalytic terms, it buries the superego. Superego is no longer in the room anymore. It's fun. All right, you're now in a kid state. In a certain sense, there's no parent in the mind. The parent of the person is now somewhere else. Okay? Now we can go into the next word. Shichrus, drunkenness. How does that affect everything? It's pretty obvious, but I'll just lay it out there. It anesthetizes superego. Then a person, just all they are is, all that's left is the id. So that's it.
That's good.
Let me give you a little story. Okay, this is best dramatized by a story. In the early years of the Torah Academy, every school has off for Purim. So, but we had many of our students did not have a Purim. So we felt, wouldn't that be wonderful if we invite them to our Purim Suda? Okay? High school students to Purim Suda. Now, obviously for a luckily to be a luckily Purim Suda, there has to be at least drinking of wine. Right? Okay? So we had this Purim Suda. That's what I remember vividly. It was at Rabbi Sachs's house. And everybody was drinking, tunes were going in the background, and it was very soon got really raunchy. To the extent that myself and Rabbi Sachs had to be physical mechitzas to keep the people from each other. Because it was crazy. We had created a monster. We get unleashed because, as you are so clearly, because the libidos of a high school student is there's nothing higher. So we just remove them all the, and you had guys and girls drinking. This was a mistake, okay? So we made it was a mistake that we never since have repeated. But it was people going crazy, okay? People going crazy.
So I got those open bars now.
Right, so the bottom, but there's a lot different, because when you're 35, you're much more, you know, you're much more repressed. You're not as crazy. When you're 14, you've never even had this experience yet. So it's just like, woo! It was crazy stuff. We had to call parents, get them out. We needed a poor evacuation here. We got a situation here. Send the poor squad team. It's out of control. We had a code red situation. So it just removed, the superego was vanished. Except we were physically the superego. We were like physically keeping people separate. It was just crazy. If we would have walked out of the room, I don't know. I don't even know what happened. It would have been an orgy. I don't know what would happen. So crazy stuff. It's Maisa Shaya. So third is Divrei Adavim. Is romantic conversations, sexual conversations, what's that?
That's sublimated sexual activity.
Right. See, this is our removing of the this is removing of all the preventative mechitzos of the psyche. So joking around, instead of being serious, now he's in a fun framework. Two, drinking. The superego is gone. It's all whatever the basic desires are there, boom. And now it's the positive. Now it's actually focusing the imagination of man in the realm of sexual opportunities. So it's putting him very simply, we talked about kavana, this is kavana for sex. That's what it is. So all romantic movies and it's focusing the mind's imagination on the entertainment possibilities of sexual exploration. So that's obviously going to be a goer, and that's going to be a cause. All right? Now, then he says, then he throws in here, and he says, they're great causes. They miles shall arayos. They are degrees of arayos. What does that mean? I think now you can figure it out. I think he basically said it. What does that mean? This shows really, this predates Freud by thousands of years. Miles shall arayos. It is degrees of prohibited sexual activities. What is the Chazal saying here? What is the Ram saying here?
Well, when you're engaged in that romantic novel or whatever you do, you're actually on a certain unconscious level, you really are having that sexual experience.
Right. Not so much unconsciously, consciously, even physiologically, to depending on the thing, you're engaged in the whole thing. So it's a level of sexual activity. A lower grade sexual, so therefore that's it. So you see, the Chazal were clearly understanding that sexuality is not only the mature full activity, but it can have expressions on lower degrees. It's interesting. There could be more that's sexual. It has a whole different kinds of expressions. It's an interesting kind of thing. All right. They say the next, a person should not be unmarried, because that will cause greater tahara. What's that concept? Why should a person be married, therefore?
Sexual outlet.
Right, because therefore, then, because he has an opportunity to express it properly. Because if he's not having it, then so therefore, by the way, just as a side, look, that's why, for example, my, advice is that, in modern world, you have these people who are engaged for like 2 years. You ever seen that situation? Have you ever seen that? The people who get married, but they're waiting until graduating until they get married. They're essentially engaged. They don't announce the engagement, but they've been dating for forever.
Right.
And they know they're going to get married,
right.
But they're waiting until they both graduate because they met each other, quote unquote, too early.
Right.
What does Allah say about that? Allah does not favor that, because that, by definition, is just a disastrous situation. Guys, the person should not be in a situation where if they know they wish to be married, they should get married as soon as possible, because you're inherently in a bad, you're in a state of iser per se. Now, he goes on.
Can I question you on that point?
Please.
But isn't there actually like a Mishnah that you know, after the Kedushin, after the Arison, they'd wait like up to like a year or something because the woman would have to prepare for the, I remember the
material. Kekashin, Kekashin.
So I mean,
yeah, they used to separate the Arison, the Kedushin from the Nisuin upwards of many months.
So they just settled down.
Interesting. Well, that doesn't apply nowadays because that they're trying to do because they weren't able to, in order to have a proper, it's interesting what that tells you. That tells you an interesting concept. Because what are they telling you? That in order to have, to get the food and the clothing and everything, to have a proper simchas nisuin, to have a proper simchas, you push that off. So nowadays, where you call a caterer and you can get yourself in a month or two,
sure,
it doesn't make anything. But I don't think I'm answering your question fully. But it's a good point. Now, this is the last one we do tonight. What's the concept is? How does he says that now? That what's the greatest salvation to this whole problem? It's chachma, because a person who's not engaged in a riot does not dominate the person. Only when a person's mind is devoid of wisdom. The person is involved in the Chachma, then that's why a person should be involved in thinking of Torah and general wisdom. How does that work? It's a very important concept. And that is, by the way, I find it in my own experience to be actually true. To be empirically, in my own experience, I've tested this truth. But how does that work? Why can guys involve Chachma? He can involve in sexual. He could fantasize about sexuality. What does one contradict the other? The guy's involved in intellectual conversation, he's listening to a shiur, whatever it is, he's now, in a certain sense, like immune, if you will, from being dominated by the overwhelming sexual urge. Assuming he's engaging in his mind is focusing on that. Why is that? Why is that true?
Well, there's some of the same.
Why can I split it then? It's one pool of energy, half for sex, half for learning.
Because you can't.
Why not?
Because you can't be like multitasking in that area.
Why not? But you're just sensing that's true.
Yeah.
Now I agree. I don't know why it can't possibly be that way, but it appears that when the mind is thinking about, if you're involved in thought, learn Talmud Torah or just general wisdom, your mind is now focused on a different. You're focused on an external reality, these worlds of ideas. It's away from you. The world of sexuality is about how to maximize your own personal pleasure. It's all about you. So it's really two different. There's two worlds that your mind can be focusing on. A is myself, which is how do I maximize this romantic sexual experience, versus exploring this world which is external to me and understanding the world which is external to me. It's two different worlds. You're dealing with two different worlds, and that's what Dave was saying is very true. They are all feeding off the same reservoir of energy, and if the energy is to explore this other world, you're not going to be immune. You're not going to be dominated by those things. Doesn't mean you're not going to have a thought. There's a difference between having a passing sexual thought versus that's dominating your whole focus. You know what I'm saying? But if a guy's those are two experiences, but in the realm of if a guy, a person is thinking about either words of Torah and they're getting into it, not that they're having to be in the room, but they're analyzing it, then they're misgaber, they're dominant over this whole sexual trend in themselves, and that's basically the chid, that's basically the angle. So that's basically what we'll do next time is to go through some of the structure, because the structure of yichud is very very intricate. Because what we've done now is we pointed out that the sexual world is very complex and very, in a certain sense, ultimately unknowable. But there are certain principles that exist in the world of sexuality that for example, we're going to see next time between male sexuality and female sexuality, which is different. and how halacha responds to each one, which is very interesting. There are halachas that apply to a guy that apply to a girl, and vice versa. We're going to get to that, which is based upon the world, the sexual world that they both experience, which is different. But here, we dealt with a universal principle of how, basically, that essentially our main point can be shrunken down to a couple senses. A is that the major, one of the major forces in man is there, is the sexual drive. It expresses itself in many ways that we're unaware of. And B, all you could do is to avoid, as Dave said, the point of no return. And there's certain things to create, to get us psychologically into that whole world, so we can avoid those things, which is the joking around, which is the drunkenness, which is being in that romantic sexual state of mind. And B, positively, is to be involved in learning, and therefore to move, is to direct that energy positively external to the self. So therefore, you're not going to become victimized by the person's natural libido. And basically, our major points. I mean, a lot of the other detailed points. But that's the basic point. And the answer to the classic modern Orthodox question, nothing's going to happen. First of all, you're fooling yourself, A. It might, and even if it would happen, is that the point is that the state itself, as Ram says, is mild shall rise. That is a degree of sexual either opportunity or engagement which the Torah felt in its infinite wisdom to make forbidden, per se. Even if it will not ever eventuate into a full, mature sexual activity. It makes no difference. It's relevant. They divide up into four stages. Some things became ushered from the Torah. Some things were, they ushered. Sometimes, partially, we'll get into the details, because this is a level of engagement in sexuality. And since it's so powerful in us, all we can do is avoid certain situations. We can't, we're not, it's interesting, we're not able to completely dominate it, absolutely. Even though that we have a mind, even though we have Bechira. But all we can do to express our Bechira is to avoid certain situations which will where we're still able to be in control. And there are, I might bring you next time, there's some interesting remarks which I mentioned months ago about some of the Tanoim or Amoroim who were disparaging certain people in the community for their inability to control themselves sexually. So the Gemara, the Medrash, the Chazal, and the Gemara there in Kedushin says that Hashem made his Yetzer Hara into a woman. He saw a woman, naked woman, on the top of a tree. I think it was a bayi. He starts running up the tree. And she gets the tree, she disappears. Then he looks down to his right, that across the river, she's crossed the river. The naked woman. So he starts to gather these boards and ties them together and makes a little raft and starts rafting across the river to get to the woman. And then a boskel comes out and says, if it wasn't for your Torah, we would let, Hashem said to him, as it were, if it wasn't for your great Torah, we would let you destroy yourself. The one of the major lessons of the story is that nobody is immune to that, and this whole story was based on even Torah, a great person, whose energy is essentially in Chachma all the time, even them could have that situation, although rare, with a perfect woman, the woman or man coming right out of your unconscious, who is the ultimate attractive force, take anybody down. Or put it another way, if you have Sarah and Moshe in a room, it's Yichud. Sarah Yimeinu and Moshe Rabbeinu, the two Nevi'im, is Yichud. Doesn't make a difference. Unless you're dead, is yichud. Okay, that's the bottom line. There's no yichud in the funeral home. Interesting more deal issue about either yichud when at the time of burial, when people are totally emotionally despondent. What do you say about that? The situation with a woman had to go and bury her 1-year-old child. Would that be a situation to be yichud with a woman? The Gemara discussed that issue. We'll deal with that issue. There's a common movie. What was that movie?
White Crashers.
Right, it dealt with the issue about the funeral thing.
Yeah, they were able to pick up women.
Right, exactly. So you see already the Chazal deal with that.
Weakness.
Exactly. The third. Okay, we'll deal with that next time.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah, Brooke, yeah.